You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast, Using Multidisciplinary Management to Address Pathophysiologic Pathways in Paroxysmal Nocturnal Hemoglobinuria. I'm joined by Dr. Anem Wahid of Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center, who is also an instructor in medicine at Harvard Medical School. We're here to talk about existing and emerging therapeutic options in patients with PNH. Welcome, Dr. Wahid.
Thank you for having me.
Before we take this deep dive into treatment, can you just give us some general background on the disease?
Absolutely. Paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria is actually a rare disorder, and it leads to complement-mediated hemolysis when it's untreated. It's secondary to an acquired mutation in the PIGA gene, which affects the hematopoietic stem cells in the bone marrow. This interferes with the biosynthesis of these GPI-anchored proteins and leads to an absence of CD55 and CD59, which are complement-regulating proteins. This leads to the hemolysis. It affects males and females equally, and it's thought to be a disease of young adults with the median age of diagnosis in the 30s. In the United States, there's an estimated 3,000 to 6,000 cases of PNH, and this is a prevalence estimate. In untreated PNH prior to availability of our current therapies, the median survival was 10 to 20 years, with thrombosis as the leading cause of death. However, with current standard therapies that are now available, this has dramatically changed the outlook for our patients. Patients with PNH are now expected to have a normal lifespan.
Great. And that's because we do have these three FDA-approved therapies. So let's discuss each, starting with eculizumab, in terms of, you know, give us an overview of the major phase 3 study, what it showed in terms of efficacy and safety.
Eculizumab was approved in 2007, and this was groundbreaking as this was the first complement inhibitor available on the market for any disease. The approval was based off this trial called the TRIUMPH study, which was a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled phase 3 trial. 87 patients were enrolled, and intravascular hemolysis was dramatically decreased. The primary endpoint for this clinical trial was median units of blood transfused, and in the treatment arm, 0 units were transfused compared to the placebo arm, which was 10 units at the time of analysis. There were serious adverse events reported in 13 patients, but none were thought to be treatment related. The most common adverse effects reported in the group who received eculizumab was headache, nasopharyngitis, back pain, and nausea. There were no significant differences between the two groups for other reported adverse events, and a single thrombotic event did occur, but that was in the placebo group. This was incredible when eculizumab was approved and available, as it dramatically changed the outlook for our patients with PNH, as we didn't have any complement-directed therapies at that time. Next, we will discuss ravulizumab, which is the second therapy approved for PNH, and this was approved in 2019. The ravulizumab approval was based on two sister studies published in Blood in 2019. The 301 study enrolled patients who were newly diagnosed and naive to complement inhibitors. They were placed on ravulizumab or placebo, and the co-primary endpoints was LDH normalization and transfusion avoidance. The 302 study enrolled patients with PNH who were already on eculizumab and compared it to patients who received ravulizumab. The primary endpoint was change in LDH. These were non-inferiority studies, and it showed that ravulizumab was indeed non-inferior to eculizumab. Side effects were very similar, and side effects included headache, nasopharyngitis, respiratory infection, and diarrhea. In 2019, the approval of ravulizumab changed therapies for patients as we were able to space out therapies from every 2 weeks, which is how eculizumab is administered, to every 8 weeks, which is how ravulizumab is administered. This was quite welcomed by our patients. The third therapy that's FDA approved for PNH is pegcetacoplan, which was approved in 2021. As I've mentioned in the other podcast, this targets C3, and therefore this is a proximal complement inhibitor, and therefore it controls both intravascular and extravascular hemolysis. The approval was based off the Pegasus trial, which was a phase 3 randomized trial, and these patients were either allowed to stay on eculizumab or randomized to switch to pegcetacoplan. At 16 weeks, these patients were assessed for the primary endpoint, which is the change in hemoglobin level from baseline to week 16. It indeed showed statistically significant difference in the change in hemoglobin level for patients who switched to pegcetacoplan compared to those who remained on eculizumab. In regards to adverse effects, pegcetacoplan is subcutaneously injected twice a week, so it actually has more injection site reactions, with 37% of patients experiencing that compared to eculizumab, which is 3%. Diarrhea was estimated to be 22% in the patients who received pegcetacoplan compared to those who were on eculizumab. Breakthrough hemolysis was 10% in those who received pegcetacoplan compared to those who were on eculizumab, and that was 23% of those patients, they had breakthrough hemolysis. Headache was more common in eculizumab at 23% compared to 7% in pegcetacoplan. So these are the three FDA-approved therapies currently available for PNH.
So how do you decide which to start your patients on?
Most patients prefer being on something that is less frequent. So typically I always choose ravulizumab over eculizumab. Pegcetacoplan is a bit challenging given that it's twice a week subcutaneous injection. So I reserve that for patients who aren't doing well on ravulizumab.
And what do clinicians need to know about starting patients on these drugs?
Eculizumab, ravulizumab, and pegcetacoplan all have recommendations for patients to be vaccinated against encapsulated organisms. It's very important to make sure these patients are up to date on their vaccines, as these are indefinite therapies. So following the guidelines provided by the manufacturer of these medications is important. The second thing to worry about is making sure patients respond to these therapies. Initially, when I start therapy, I make sure I have baseline laboratory results, and then I'm able to follow them very closely to see that they have improvement in their labs as well as in their symptoms.
So you see them every time they come in for an infusion?
Initially, I do. And ultimately, once they're stable, I don't have to see them each time they get their infusion. But initially, I do, especially for my patients who are newly diagnosed.
Do you see them as effective and with the same safety profile in the real life clinical setting that we saw in the clinical trials?
Yes, these are very effective medications. We do worry about infection, especially initially when the trials were published. We were extremely worried about encapsulated organisms and infections such as meningitis. I do keep a close lookout on my patients who are on these medications, but I feel that remaining up to date on vaccination is the best prevention strategy for these patients. These medications are incredibly effective for the majority of my patients. However, there are patients who continue to have ongoing intravascular hemolysis, and many of my patients continue to require intermittent blood transfusions. I do counsel them that despite being on treatment, they may have intermittent breakthrough hemolysis, especially in settings of stress such as surgery or infections. They know to call me if they ever feel that something is off or they need their blood checked earlier.
Great. And so now let's move on to the future. And we have at least three late-stage agents under investigation. Tell us what the clinical trials there are showing and how they differ from the drugs that you're currently using.
The medications currently under investigation include iptacopan, danicopan, and crovalimab. There are several others, but they're currently in early stage. First of all, let's start with iptacopan. This was presented at the American Society of Hematology late-breaking abstract in 2022 in New Orleans. The APPLY-PNH study is a 24-week multi-center phase 3 randomized trial of 97 patients. And notably, these patients have a hemoglobin less than 10, and they're on stable therapy with either eculizumab or ravulizumab. So again, highlighting those patients who may not have a complete response to C5 inhibitors. And then these patients are randomized to either stay on their current therapy with eculizumab and ravulizumab or switch to iptacopan monotherapy, which is orally administered twice a day. And what they looked at is the adjusted mean hemoglobin change from baseline. And what they saw was a statistical difference in patients who switched to iptacopan. They saw a 3.59 grams per deciliter increase in patients receiving iptacopan compared to those who remained on standard of care. The patients were more likely to avoid blood transfusions while on iptacopan. There were no deaths or significant adverse events leading to discontinuation in this trial. There were also no serious infections caused by encapsulated organisms. Another trial related to iptacopan is the APPOINT-PNH trial, and now this is looking at patients with PNH who are naive to complement therapy, meaning they've not yet received eculizumab or ravulizumab. And the primary endpoint is looking at a sustained increase in hemoglobin greater than 2 grams per deciliter. We look forward to seeing those results. The next therapy under investigation is danicopan, which is under study with a phase 3 trial called the Alpha Trial. This was presented at the European Hematological Association conference in Frankfurt in June. This is an oral factor D inhibitor, which again is now targeting the alternative complement pathway. And the way they are studying it is that patients who are already on eculizumab or ravulizumab who have evidence of extravascular hemolysis will receive danicopan in addition to their current standard of therapy. So patients will be randomized to receiving danicopan or a placebo while continuing their C5 inhibitor. And so far, their primary endpoint is hemoglobin improvement, and they have reported that this is showing statistical significance. The third drug under investigation that's in the late phase is called crovalimab, which is a novel anti-5 recycling monoclonal antibody. So this targets C5, which is the terminal complement system. What makes this slightly different from eculizumab and ravulizumab is that this is subcutaneous and given every 4 weeks. The current study is a phase 3 open label study evaluating the safety of crovalimab in patients switching from current eculizumab treatment, and it's a non-inferiority study looking at the co-primary endpoint of hemolysis control and transfusion avoidance. We look forward to their final results.
Great. Sounds like a lot going on.
Yes.
So what have I not asked you about in this topic that you want to say as a final statement to our audience?
I think you've already asked, but I will emphasize that as the landscape for complement inhibitors changes, it's going to be very interesting to see how we treat PNH patients. What will be our first line therapy? What will be our second line therapy? Additionally, one thing I didn't mention is that these complement inhibitors are initially studied in these patients with PNH, but now have expanded approvals in other diseases, which is very interesting as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Waheed. That's all the time we have for today. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us. We hope you'll listen to another episode from this series. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for continuing medical education to provide CME for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME essentials. And I want to give a special thank you to our supporter, Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, which provided an educational grant for this activity.